Yesterday we went through the four basic mitzvos of having children, Peruvu and Lesheves Yitzara. We discussed possible differences between Peruvu and Lesheves. We went through that it could be even different Kedarim in terms of how many children you have to have, that different Kedarim in terms of who's Chayiv. Women are part of Peruvu, they may be Chayiv in Sheves. Those two issues may be related, right? If a woman has one child, But that's enough for Sheves. Maybe she has no obligation anymore. Whereas a man has to have two children, and we paskin a boy and a girl. And we discuss Boker Zoros Rachel Erev Al Tanach Yadecha, the idea of continuing to have children as we get older, as a requirement or a mitas chasidus, machlokas rishonim about that. And at the very end, we discuss the idea of Ein Ben David Ba Achiyich Lekol Neshamos Shebaguf, that there's a general responsibility that the Jewish people have to try to bring Mashiach. And one of the things that we know is that Mashiach will only come when all of the neshamos are sort of emptied out from their storage facility up in Shemayim, and therefore when a couple has a large family, when they have lots of children, they are doing their part in bringing about the coming of Mashiach. That is the summary of yesterday's shiur. So today I said what we'd like to get into, really two things. First of all, the hashkafa of having children, because a lot of this is hashkafa related. It's not just all pure halacha. And secondly, to get into the issue of spacing children, meaning how much time, meaning most often when you talk to a couple about birth control, so they're not coming with the agenda of never having a family. Right? They're not coming and saying, oh, we're never interested in having a family. No, they're coming to ask a question: can we delay? Can we wait before having a family? Or we already have a child, he's giving us a run for our money, we haven't slept in a year and a half. Can we wait before having our next child? Right? Those are the questions that we typically have. So we'll discuss the inyan of delaying and how that plays a role in halacha. But first, the hashkafa issue. The Gemara Maseches Ksubos and Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis tells us, Ein Isha Ela Libanim. Now, the way that people often translate that phrase is that a woman is only good for children. That is objectively not true, meaning we know that that's not true. So that can't be what the Gemara means. What the Gemara more likely means is that there are many, many great things about marriage. There's partnership in life, there's emotional support, there's becoming a giver, there's having someone who fully understands you, there's romantic love, there's many tax exemptions, right? Tax breaks. There are many, many wonderful things about marriage, and all of them are good and all of them are wonderful. But the most important reason to get married is to perpetuate the Jewish people. Meaning being able to have the next generation of Jewish people come through you is the most important value of all the values, of all of the great values of marriage. That might be why the Gemara in Yevamos of Samach Dalid says that Nasi Isha Vishayima Eser Shana V'lo Yolda Ein Rashi Levatel. That if a person gets married and they don't have children for 10 years, he cannot be mevatel the mitzvah anymore. And Medina de Gemara, even though the Rama writes, we don't do this anymore, Medina de Gemara, they should get divorced so that he can fulfill his mitzvah with somebody else. The Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer, Simna Aleph, Si'if Aleph, is very, very clear that this is the primary reason to get married. Shulchan Aruch says, Chayuv kol adam lisa isha, and then he says, Kidei lifros velirbos. They couldn't be more clear than that. You have to get married. Why? Kidei. So that you will be able to have children. And anyone who does not engage in pruvu, it's like he's murdering. He's minimizing the image of God, v'gorim l'shchina shetzalik miyisrael, and he's causing the shchina to abandon klal Yisrael. Very, very strong words. The Rama adds in the other reasons for marriage also that Chazal tell us about. The Rama writes, kol mishein lo isha, shari below bracha, below Torah. The Gemara says all those things also, that someone who's not married, he doesn't have bracha in his life the way he should. He doesn't have Torah in his life the way he should. So all of those values of being married as well. V'lo nikra adam, and kivin shenasa isha avonosa mispakikim shenamer matzi isha matzatov v'yafakratzon me'ashem, that it helps cleanse one of their averos when they get married. All of these great things about getting married, and it helps with the Yetzer Hara a lot. All of these great things, and they're all true, they're all great, they're all wonderful. But the Ramah's not arguing with the Mechaber. The Mechaber says the reason you're chayiv is kidei lifros v'lirbos. And that has to be the Ashkafa, meaning when a couple wants to get married, the hashkafa should be that the primary purpose of what we're doing over here is not to indulge our sexual desires, not to get the tax break, not to whatever. The primary purpose is lifros v'lirbos. Rav Shechter points out that the nature of the mitzvah is to perpetuate Klal Yisrael, not just the human race. Right, that's why the Rambam in the 15th parak of Hilchos Ishus quotes the Gemara in Yevamos about a ger fulfilling the mitzvah with the children that he had begiyuso, and then the Rambam adds, "Hayu lo bana begiyuso v'nis gayer hu veheim harezakiy mitzvazu." That if a guy had children, he was a non-Jew, and then both he and his children converted, he fulfills the mitzvah of puravu. Magen Mishnah explains why. Otherwise, he would have to get married in order to have Jewish children. So apparently, the Rambam understood the Gemara to be telling us that as long as he is responsible for the presence of Jewish people in this world that came from him, even though at the time that he did the Maisa Mitzvah, he was not a Jew, and at the time that they came into this world, that they were born, they were not Jewish, but that's not the Mitzvah. The Mitzvah is perpetuating Judaism, and he has that. He's accomplished that, because there are Jews in the world. I would often, when guys sometimes ask if they're unsure, if they're ready to date, so one of my things that I would often say to them in discussing it when I was teaching undergrad, very often, you know, at some point during undergrad, you know, toward the end of college, guys are thinking about starting to date. So I used to sit next to the mashkiach. So the mashkiach would go through money with them. He would say, well, how are you going to support a wife? How are you going to, you know, and he would go through what things cost and you got to be responsible. How's this going to work? You know, and some kids would be like, oh, my parents will take care of it. Okay, that's an answer. It's an answer. But you have to. So I would always go different. I would take a different tactic. I would always say, can you imagine in your mind in a year from now that you'll be a father? And if the guy totally freaks out and runs the other way, he's probably not ready. Right? Meaning, if the hashkafa is that you're getting married, kidei lifros v'lirbos. So if a person thinks that he's only ready to date because he really likes girls, that's nice, but it's kidei lifros v'lirbos. Rav Matzio Solomon points out, Rav Neuberger quoted, that our introduction, this past week's part, our introduction to Shifra and Puah, right? Who are Shifra and Puah? They were Yocheved and Miriam. Miriam was one of the Nevi'os. And yet our introduction to Shifra and Puah is what? That they took care of Jewish children. Apparently, the Torah deems it more worthy to introduce us to Miriam as one who took care of Jewish children than as a Nevi'ah. That was a greater contribution to the Jewish people. So this is not something to be taken lightly. Furthermore, the Torah writes in Ebenezer Siman Aleph, Kavanas habriya ba'adam kedei lifros v'lirbos. The purpose of creation is that we should reproduce. That's where the Shulchan Aruch got the lashon from. Shekol mi she'in olsik bepriya ruvia ki ilu shofich damim. Tichsev shofich dama adam. Samuch lev atem peruvu. Uki ilu memayit admos. Tichsev ki bitzal vel ki masas adam atem peruvu. Gam shim shet zayv nisal. Exactly like the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch takes it straight from the Torah. But there are a couple of additional elements hashkafa to fill in that are of more recent vintage. In the Tshuvas Chalkas Yaakov, Ebenezer Siman Samach Aleph, Rav Yaakov Breish, writing shortly after the Holocaust, he writes, Yedidi Yakiri, Kasha Ma'odu Ma'od L'Sariv Me'rachot Binyanim Elu. Someone asked him about family planning issues. He says, you know, I don't live in your neighborhood. I don't really know you. Very, very hard to discuss these matters. Yanki harbe pa'am mashe'eleinu b'nuya adnei ha'emes. And he says, you're asking shailas about, is it dangerous for my wife? The doctor said this, that doctor said that. He says, a lot of times the information isn't even accurate. The information that we're working with isn't even accurate. Ki harofim harbe ma'od magzimim. Very often doctors exaggerate. That is true, meaning it is very helpful to have from doctors who understand, just in general, we've discussed this in the past, who understand halacha and understand the concept of halacha. Otherwise, the doctor will always be cautious, right? Because it just, and something extra cautious. What do I need to be sued for? Why do I even need to think about it? Why do I need to analyze it? Just tell them, play it safe. Don't ever fast, right? You know, things like that. Why would you not eat? You know, those kinds of things. So he says, Yan ki l'daitam ha-meshubash minias hirayon eino klum. From a doctor's perspective, birth control is nothing. It doesn't matter. And they'll say sakana for anything. You really have to verify whether it's true. Even if they're telling you it's dangerous, you have to really see if that's true. Very often, the couples just aren't interested in having large families. People are just more interested in enjoying life. You know, it's not easy having children. Pregnancy is not easy. Childbirth is not easy. Raising children is not easy. He says, you know, we have in Chazal a case of twins that were born 3 months apart. Can you imagine the kind of pain that pregnancy probably brought about? She had this overwhelming pain. Then he goes on to say, this is not the part that I was looking for. He says, here it is. To our great sadness. After the churban that we just experienced, shemi mishpachos gedolus va'atzumos lo nishar ela hakaton shebehem, that from these massive, large families, all you're left with is the youngest of them or the smallest of them. Shahar beipam mahorim shalhem im hayu biyadam hayu mevatrim al leidasam. A lot of times, like we said yesterday with Rav Shach, there were parents that, you know, if they would have had the ability to practice contraception, they would have been very happy to not have those last couple of children. And yet, those are the only ones that survived. Those are the only ones that were ashamed for their family. One has to take this very seriously and think about the repercussions of things. It could be that this pregnancy is going to produce something great. Who knows what history has in store for us? And a lot of times, the real reason that people want to practice birth control is just to make their lives easier. To avoid the curse that was given to Chava, that childbirth is going to be difficult. And they don't think long term about, you know, the fact, especially a young couple, they're not thinking about who's going to take care of me in my old age. They're not thinking about the kind of nachas that comes with seeing children and grandchildren growing in Torah and Yir Shemayim. You know, you think of like some of these large families where the patriarch or matriarch of the family take a family picture at the chasana and they're surrounded by like 150 people or something. They're not thinking about what that nachas is like because they're 22 years old. They're not thinking like that. So it's the responsibility of the Rav to sort of guide them in that. He says, "Luchach meyaskilu zos kol chalali dialma lo yichu ahorim bad pre vitnam sheish lem kvar zos amer shekol hona lo yish v'lehem." I mean, imagine a couple has a child, and then you say, "I'll give you $1 million for that child." So a normal couple say, "No, the child is not for sale," and yet before the child is born, we're willing for nothing, for no money, to avoid having the child. So he says, "You should think of it as if the kid's already there." Ulumnoa prebit namalza ovum kach bekalus rosh, to avoid having kid bekalus rosh. See papu uta, he says. And why? Because you want to live a more comfortable life. So he says, umi yodea kama gedolim vanshe mas maisa nevdu l'sibazu. Who knows how many gedolim Klal Yisrael lost out on having because of this. Umu'uva shal yuchal lisakin, there's no way to go back and fix it. Tanaya chayim shal avasenu v'avos avasenu betach lo hayu mishuparim kach benogea ladirus nikayin v'agiyani. He says, certainly our standard of living is much greater than ever in human history. Va'avon gadol osin bazel lios kafoy tova l'ashem yisparach badez rasa lichios bediros meruvachim benikayon v'giyani makom mukhsho l'gadol banim v'banos yosin mashay l'avaseinu. We live in larger homes, we live in cleaner homes, we live in homes where there are toys for children to play with. I remember when we built a toy closet in our playroom when my kids were young, so it's like a whole wall, and you open up the closet and it's like full of toys. And my grandfather, Sultan Gesund, walked into the room and he's like, oh, just like I had in Europe. And it was nothing like he ever had in Europe, you know. So, and then he writes at the end of the tshuva, Harachti k'tzas b'dvarim, yan kili b'davoy al hapirtza shen esparza b'chugim shonim b'eshtadei u'moseinu lachos hamada harur b'tzarfas v'anilvim lahem. He says, I went, you know, a little long in emoting over this issue. So he's not saying that there's never a heder, just that the topic has to be taken very seriously. It should not be taken lightly, and people shouldn't say, there's no reason to discuss it. Whatever, you know, the halacha has no business in a person's bedroom. We don't assume that way. Later in the tshuva, he allows contraception in certain circumstances. I mean, he actually goes on to discuss the cases where it is mutter. Rav Shachter quotes that tshuva. He doesn't quote the whole passage, but he refers to that tshuva in his article. It's another hashkafic issue to consider is that very often people have trouble conceiving, and one of the most important things to know, and this is something a chassan kala should be told also, that very often people have trouble conceiving. It's not a majority of people, but it's a reasonable minority of people that do not have an easy time conceiving a child. And it's good to know that everything is in working order, you know, to have that one child, that you're able to have children. Children are a very great bracha. It's important not to reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha. And as a rabbi, I can tell you that you'll often have the case where you're on the phone with one couple that's trying to work with some organization to get funding for the next round of IVF because it failed the first time, and they're working and they're struggling trying to have children, and then you hang up the phone and the next call is, oh, can we meet with you about birth control because we're not really in the mood to have kids? And it's like, it's hard to go from one to the other. I mean, like, you see what a bracha it is and how it's not something that should be taken for granted, but a young couple doesn't see that, meaning they haven't lived through that yet, so they don't see it. So part of the reason that it's so important to talk these things out is because they have to see these things. You have to explain these things to them, that it's not a given that you'll just be zochet to have children easily. And it's true, we live in a generation where it's very rare that you have a couple that has no eitzah, that they're not going to be able to, you know, medically they're not going to be able to do something. It's amazing, the fertility medicine is centuries ahead of where it was a decade ago. Like, the advances have come so quickly, it's just amazing. But it still comes with a tremendous amount of agnas nefesh for a lot of people, a tremendous amount of stress, and it puts stress on the marriage. And it's a tremendous amount of money, and money puts tremendous stress on the marriage, and all of these things need to be appreciated. We need to appreciate that these things are bracha. Very often, a young couple just doesn't have the full perspective, and they need guidance. You just need to sort of broaden their view a little bit. Rabbi Neuberger pointed out that the widespread availability of oral contraception has caused great promiscuity. Right, because it separated the responsibility of the relationship from the pleasure of the relationship. And now there's such a thing, very easily, of the pleasure of the relationship without any of the responsibility that comes along with it. And that's sort of, as everything else in the culture in which we live, in some way has crept into our culture. And it's become a normal expectation to delay having children, but it's not the norm, nor is it the default. The default should be, that's the default. we need a reason to say otherwise. And we should realize that's what success in life is. You know, we very often define success by other things, by a high-paying job or something like that. If you ever hear around the Shabbos table, someone say, oh, he's very successful. So what do they mean when they say he's very successful? There's only one thing they mean. Very successful means he's very rich. That's all it ever means. It never means, but that shouldn't be how we define success. We should define, he's very successful, his children are all Yireim Ushleim. He's raising a door of, you know, we asked, not we, but when Rav Shechter was in Eretz Yisrael over the summer, he met with the Smichas Chaver program in Yerushalayim, and they asked him, what's your greatest success in life? What's your greatest accomplishment in life? So he could have said anything, you know, he's done a lot of really good things. He wrote some really fantastic svarim. He has thousands of some really great talmidim. He's been a Rosh Yeshiva for weathered a lot of storms over here. You know, he's done some really, really amazing things. And he said, my greatest accomplishment is that I'm a link in a chain that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and I didn't drop the ball, meaning my children are all fruit. So it didn't stop with me. I was able to pass on that mesorah to my children, to the next generation. That's success. Oh, he's a successful Rosh Yeshiva, he's this, he's that. No, success is raising a Jewish family of Yirei Shemayim. That's how we define success. That's a little bit of the hashkafa. Now, getting into... Yeah.
Do you ever have talmidim that come to you, or like even like smicha students who say like, I'm afraid to have children because I don't know, like we live in a crazy world, I don't know if my kids are going to...
Yes, usually... they're not coming from a perspective of I don't want to have children because I'm afraid of the crazy world that we live in. They're coming from with just anxiety. Of course I know I'm going to have children, but I'm just suffering with this anxiety. It sometimes happens after a couple already has a few children. Someone came to me a couple of weeks ago with that exact thing. He already has several children of one gender, and he said, every time I go on Yeshiva World News, someone else got beat up in Brooklyn. How can I bring another child into a world that looks like it's going in that direction? Right? So people do struggle with a variety of anxieties, and that has to be taken into account in terms of how to best calm those anxieties and how to best appreciate. You know, the Rosh Yeshiva of Eshet Torah, when we met with him last week, I asked him this question, not about having children, but about, I said, how should we look at all of these anti-Semitic attacks and all these? Should we say, okay, we're in the 1930s, pre-war Nazi Germany, and this is where we're headed? Because that's what some people are saying. I'm sure you've heard that, right? That's what some people are saying. So Shiva Veshatar said, you should realize, as long as it's in the news, we're okay. Because if it's news, that means that it's unusual, that it's still, not the norm. When it becomes the norm and it's no longer news, that's when we're in real trouble. Interesting perspective. He said, that's why the news, you know, he says, I'm not like a fake news person or anything, but he said, that's why the news is such a... It's such a warped view of what reality is, because it's only newsworthy if it's the Yotzei Min HaKlal. So it's like basing your view of reality based on reality television. You know, it's like the whole thing is meant to be a Yotzei Min HaKlal. It's meant to be like extreme and crazy and whatever. But yeah, that's a serious problem that people face.
I know there's some of them that say either l'chatchila or like easily, that for the sake of building a strong marriage from the beginning, it's good to delay at the beginning.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. We'll get to delaying at the beginning and what the svaras are. There are some rabbanim that are Yirei Shemayim, and you know that just say that keseder 100%. Meaning there are rabbanim that say that way. We'll get to that too. A couple of things in terms of difficult situations first. The Gemara Maseches Sota Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, also from the parsha this past week. Tana Amram Gadol Ador Haya. Amram was a Gadol Ador. Kivan Shara Shamar Shagazar Paro Rasha Kol Bena Yelod Hayor Teshlichuhu. He saw that Paro made a gzeira to throw all the male babies into the river. Amar L'Shavu Ramein. He said, what are we doing this for? It's exactly that issue. All this anti-Semitism, they're going after all of us. Why would I bring a child into the world? Amad V'girish Zishto. And he divorced his wife. Amdu kulan v'girshus nashos sayin, and everyone followed because he was the leader of the community. Amr lo bito, so his daughter said, Miriam said, Abba, kashik zeyrascha yosem mishal paro, you're worse than paro. Sheparo lo gazar al zcharim, ata gazart al zcharim v'al nekevos. You're making sure that there are no Jewish girls either. Paro lo gazar al balmazeh, ata balmazeh liyom abba. Paro Rasha Safik Miskayamas Kzeiros Safik Ein Miskayamas. Atat Tzadik Bevadai Shekzeiros Chamiskayamas. So what you're doing is worse. Shenemar Tikzor Rav Yaakov Lach. So Amad Vichzirus Ishto Amdukulin Vichzirus Nashusay. So Amad got remarried, and what did that produce? Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning, the Hashkafa has to be that we can't play God's Cheshbonos in terms of the arc of history. So yeah, people had large families before the war, and the Agmas Nefesh that had before that caused during the Holocaust, and the loss of so many people with 13 children and 12 of them die. But would we rather they not had those 13 children and the world never have a Rav Shach? Would we rather Amram stop at two and say, I was Mekayim Pru Ravu, and the world never have a Moshe Rabbeinu? So there are many poskim that hold that you can even violate a Shvus Rabbanan on Shabbos for the sake of Peri Viridya. That's even during the war, although that's a separate issue during wartime, whether it's Mutar Eftash or Hamita, but that's for a separate, although for Pru Ravu it's Mutar. Tosfos refers to Peru as a mitzvah rabbah, and there are a number of indications that that's true, that it's a mitzvah rabbah. The Gemara Megillah Daf Chav Zayin says that you're allowed to, and it was Pasuk Shulchan Aruch, that you're not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah for pretty much anything, but for the mitzvah Puravu, you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah. It's one of the very few exceptions of what you can sell a Sefer Torah for. The Gemara Navel Dazar Daf Yud Gimel, that a Kohen can't leave Eretz Yisrael, but to fulfill Puravu, he's allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Because there's Tumas Eretz Ha'am, and we assume that there's Tuma all over the rest of the world, the Mesei Mabul or whatever. So, but the Kohen is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for Puravu. The Gemara in Ksuba Staf Ayin Beis, that if a woman refuses to have children, you could divorce her without paying her Ksuba, because she's considered to be ruining the marriage. That's but she's so nice, and she's and you get along really well, and everything else. No, but refusal to have children is a destruction of the entire marriage. In Yevamos Daf Beis, a person marries a woman who turns out to be an islandist. That's Kiddush Etalus, because the primary reason to get married is to have children. There is a question in halacha whether one has an obligation to pursue fertility treatment. It is very expensive. It's very it causes a lot of anxiety. So what if you have a couple that they have not fulfilled Puravu, and they realize that they're not able to have more children? So can they say, all right, score, we win, we don't have to do Anus Rachman Apatre, so we don't have to, we didn't want them anyway, so now we don't have to. Or do we say, no, your obligation is to have children, and you got to do it one way or the other. So in the Nishmas Avraham, Ebenezer Simon Ayin, it quotes from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and it's in the Chuvin Mincha Shlomo as well, Madura Tinyana Simon Kuf Chav Dalid, at the end of Os Beis, and Zilberstein, Shir Torah Lerovim, Chelik Dalid, Os Reishon and Zayin, that there's no Chiv to pursue. That your chiyuv is as far as the natural way it goes, but whenever you're going beyond what's natural, there's no chiyuv to pursue. However, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the current Sephardic chief rabbi, wrote a tshuva to Machon Pua, and Rabbi Neuberger also wrote a tshuva to Machon Pua, where they think that there is a requirement to pursue treatments. It could be because maybe now it's become normal hishtadlus, meaning it used to be that it was like it was very yotzi min haklal that to do a lot of these things, but now it's like it's kaseh there. There are certain things that Rav Asher Weiss has kulas on with relation to fertility, and other poskim, other great gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, were machmir on in terms of sperm collection and things like that in fertility treatments. So Rav Asher has told us many times that that the grandchildren of those gedolim come to him for the piskei halacha, and he knows why they came to him and not to their grandfather. And he said that, that there, as someone who's been in Shari Tzedek, been the rav of Shari Tzedek, he said Shari Tzedek produces more Jewish babies. I'm not saying delivers more Jewish. Of course, they deliver more babies than any hospital in the world, I think, but they produce. The fertility lab in Shari Tzedek, I was in the fertility lab in Shari Tzedek, and your mom's watching babies being made. It's like it's wild in a lab. It's unbelievable. It's mamish unbelievable. So it's become like very normal. Rav Avadia Yosef once commented to a husband who said that he has no obligation to pursue any treatment. So Rav Avadia says, you may be right, but he says, Ein cha roa es ishtecha bocha. You don't see your wife crying. He says, maybe you don't have a chiyuv peruvu, but you have a chiyuv v'after l'recha kamocha. That's a quote that in the Sifrei Machon Pua as well.
Why wouldn't it just follow how much money do you need to spend in general?
That argument could certainly be made. That Hamavazveh Hamavazveh so Mechamish, except when it comes to Peruvu, it seems that we ignore Hamavazveh. Because children always cost more money than one-fifth of your money, meaning there would be no Peruvu. There are very few people that spend less than 20% of their money on their children. Meaning, I was just telling you something, my tuition bill this year for my kids was $130,000. So I am very, very rich, but my that's still more than 20% of my money that I'm making this year. So everyone spends more than that. How does it work? I don't know. We'll figure it out. But, you know, ultimately it works.
This whole discussion now was for a couple that doesn't have any kids already, or the couple that has kids.
So in Shari Tzedek, they actually, you know, in America, they getting fertility treatments covered is came out impossible. In Israel, the government pays for it, and even if you have a lot of kids already, the government will continue to pay for it. In Shari Tzedek, they told us there are couples with 8 or 9 children that are coming for fertility treatments. It's a busha, 8 or 9 kids in their neighborhood. So I mentioned to you, my father, when my sister had, I think, her 7th kid. So my father said, you know what they call 7 kids in your neighborhood? A good start. So now she's no longer a busha, Baruch Hashem. It's obviously much more pressing if a couple has not yet fulfilled Peruvu. Obviously, there are circumstances that we permit contraception. For health reasons, obviously, that's one of the most major need. Generally speaking, you know, if Schechter starts his article by saying that generally speaking, we shouldn't really be discussing these issues at all, because Ein Dorshin Ba'arayas B'Shlosh, Gemara Chagiga Daf Yud Aleph says, and Rav Meisher writes in the Tshuva, Nebnezer Chel Gimel Simen Yud Dalet, he says, Eini Rotzel Lefarsim Dvarim Elu, Shlo Nitnu Likasev Bi'archonim Amasurim Lekol Ish V'Isha, Ki Dvarim Ke'elu, Ein Dorshin B'Shlosh, Kamo Ba'arayas. Rav Meisher writes that certain things you wouldn't put in like a publication that gets into everybody's hands. You want them specifically in Svarim, because people who are Anashim Pshut, Ben Rechokim, Yiras Hashem, and Yiras Chet, are gonna fool themselves into thinking that they have Heterim that they don't have. However, around 40 years ago, when Rav Schechter wrote his article, he says, over the past 20 years, this topic has been dealt with at length in both public forums and popular journals. Its treatment, unfortunately, has been less than satisfactory, with presentations often being incomplete and inaccurate. Several Gedolim felt that a new halachic paper on the subject in English would be appropriate, and it's upon their insistence that this paper is being written. So the basic sugya, when it comes to permitting contraception, is Yivam Mustafi Beis and Beis. And we're going to go more into this when we discuss methods of birth control, but for now, let's just give some generalities. Tani Rav Bibi Kamed Rav Nachman, Shalosh Nashim Meshamshos B'moch, that there are 3 women that are allowed to be Meshamish using Moch, which is a Talmudic form of birth control. Katana, Mu'uberus, and Manika. Katana, Shemet Tzabar, V'Shemet Tamos. Why can a Katana use birth control? Because if she gets pregnant, it will be dangerous. She'll die. Mu'beres, shemetasu b'sandal, will be dangerous to the fetus. A pregnant woman will be dangerous to the fetus if she gets pregnant again, which the Gemara assumes is a possibility. Minika, shemetigmol b'navi yamos, it will be a nursing woman who will be a danger to the baby because she's going to stop nursing. Vezui katanim, basiral v'shan v'yamecha, v'shan v'yamecha, pachas mikan v'yesra, okay, v'shemesh k'darko v'alechas, v'remeir, v'chom v'machzu v'achzu, v'shemesh k'darko v'alechas, v'shemesh k'darko v'alechas, v'shemesh. Fine. So how exactly we define a katana and whether a person is allowed to take that risk. But that's the basic sugya. Rav Moshe writes, in Ebenezer Chelgal Sim Samach Dalit, Rav Moshe writes, L'maisa, Kishem Ezdami Chele Kazu, Ani Choker V'Doresh Harbe Im Yesh Li Isha Sakana Bazeh, similar to what we saw from the Chokas Yaakov. Rav Moshe says, yeah, you can't just take it at their word that they say that it's dangerous. You have to really see if that's true. You have to see, are these people Yirei Shemayim? Are they going to take things too far? I also tell people this conversation is private. When I have this conversation with people, says Rav Moshe, not to go around telling everyone. You know, everyone in this yeshiva knows that when you get married, you go to that rabbi if you want a heter, and if you don't want a heter, you go to that rabbi. And Rav Moshe says, I'm insistent that that should never happen with me, that each situation is different and each situation has to be dealt with, and it shouldn't be, oh, you get a heter over there, or you go over there. That's not the way it should go. Um, And the concern that people will take things beyond where it was originally intended is a legitimate, it's a very legitimate concern. That's another reason that some of the guys were discussing after Shir yesterday about Rabbanim that are against placing time frames on things. I am very, very, very much in favor of placing time frames on things. Meaning when you are going to say to someone, you can use contraception in this circumstance, do not just say it like that. It should always, Ramosha's minhag was 6 months at a time. Others sometimes healthy to do 3 months at a time. There are several reasons why it's very healthy to put time frames on it. First of all, it resets the default, meaning the default position when a couple gets married is that they're getting married to have children. So sometimes there's a reason that they can't be having children. Okay, but you don't want their new default to be that we're not having children. So you say, oh, it's contraception. So now it takes a decision to have children. No. In 3 months, in 4 months, in 6 months, you need to think about this again and think about whether you have a good reason not to be having children. So that's one reason. Another reason is that very often it will put the husband and wife on different pages. It will be, I had one case where I told the couple they can wait 6 months based on their circumstances. And I did give a time frame, but I didn't follow up with them after 6 months. And I met the guy at a wedding a little while later. And the guy came over to me and said, Rabbi, I need to talk to you. And he will go into a separate room and he says, I don't know what to do. It's a year and a half since you gave that psak. Everything is fine now. The shalom bias is good. The financial situation is good. The anxiety, everything is under control. Everything's fine. And I'm ready to have children. And, you know, for the last 6 months already. And my wife just keeps saying, yeah, why don't we wait till we move, till we this, till we that? Why don't we wait? He's like, I don't know what to do. I don't, you know, how do I handle this? So I was at that wedding. I was sitting next to Rabbi Willig. So I asked him. I told him that someone just came over to me with that issue. I said, so what do you say? So he said, I would say, who gave them the heter in the first place? I said, that would be me. He's like, you never should have done that. You never should have given them it, because Rabbi Willig was very, very strong about this this issue. But that's something that it's good to know that a conversation is going to have to be had at a particular time, and then to actually follow up and have that conversation. And that's what Rav Moshe writes. V'gam kein rak al zman kotzer. Rav Moshe writes, whenever a heter is given, it should be given for a short period of time. V'chein b'chol pam, medayin em tzrichon heter. Ah, you know this problem's going to last for 2 years? Doesn't matter. We're going to talk about it again in 6 months' time, even though you know the issue is going to last for 2 years. Things change in people's lives. Can't tell you how many times I've given people a heter for, and we'll talk in 6 months from now. They never came back 6 months because when I texted them 6 months later, time to talk again, they said, "Oh, my wife is 2 months pregnant already." You know, they realized that the situation changed and that they were ready to have children. And then Rav Moshe writes what we alluded to yesterday. He says there are very few cases where I actually was matir. He says, and that's the way an expert rabbi should deal with the situation. Stam rabbis, chas v'shalom, that they should paskin on such issues. And I would say chas v'shalom ben benoshal chas v'shalom to issue public psakim on these issues. One thing, you're going to talk to someone who has a relationship with you and you're following some sort of mesorah, some sort of psak from Gedolei Yisrael on how to deal with it, but to issue like a daya that's going to be put out there when it's stam rabbanim and we're not dealing with Gedolei Torah, with the greatest Gedolei Torah, so Rav Moshe says that would be, it's not me, it's Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe says that would be a terrible thing. Lubavitcher Rebbe has a letter that's quoted in the Sifrei Mechilat Purim where he has a much more soft stance. He says when the Kshar Rofe Omer v'pemali davke shezeh osakana mamish u'piprat b'dorereinu cholesh zeh hinei haprishus osu roshem ala ni'urin v'ala brius b'chlal hein shele ish v'hein shele isha v'chein yesh lomar shamekel baraz bazeh Lemarot chomer ha'inyan mitzaratzmo u'kumvor b'niglu b'chasidus harei lo levad shlo hifsid la'ashoel el sha'od yon b'briyus b'gashmiz gam b'briyus b'ruchnis. Meaning he says that if the doctor says it, you could trust him, because especially since it will have a major emotional impact on the couple if you're going to say that I don't trust your doctor, I don't think that the doctor is actually being honest. Okay. So the basic approach is that, first of all, hashkafically, it's not about looking for a heter. Rav Neuberger likes to say, it's not about looking for a heter, it's about figuring out what the Ratzon Hashem is. Looking for a heter implies that you have a decision that you've already made, and you now want to justify that decision. That's not the way we live life. We live life figuring out what Ratzon Hashem is. Sometimes Ratzon Hashem is not to have children. More often, Ratzon Hashem is yes to have children. But that's what it's about, figuring out Ratzon Hashem. In cases of sakana or chashash sakana to the woman, it's clear that we would use contraception. The only discussion posts can have is how to verify that it is in fact a chashash sakana. And contemporary posts can have added to that emotional sakana as well. That if there's a major emotional danger as well. There's an interesting discussion in halacha about anus rachmana patre. Right, so we assume that a sakana is going to be an anus. So anus rachmana patre, Rav Yosef Engel has that comment. You know, Rav Yosef Engel has a piece on Ben Adam Lachaverim, Ben Adam Lamakam. That anus rachmana patre only applies to Ben Adam Lamakam, doesn't apply to Ben Adam Lachaverim. He doesn't really mean that. When he says Ben Adam Lachaverim, he doesn't mean Ben Adam Lachaverim. He means goal oriented mitzvahs. Meaning there are Maisa-oriented mitzvahs, and there are goal-oriented mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs where the mitzvah is to do the mitzvah. It's Ratzon Hashem. And then they're like taking a lulav. What does it accomplish? It's what Hashem wants. That's what it accomplishes. And then there are mitzvahs where you're meant to accomplish something in our world, in Olam Hazeh. Like Makal Gagecha. Right? It's meant to make a safe environment. So you don't say Onus Rachman Apatre in building a Makal. Because you don't have a safe environment. So I don't care that you're honest. You got to have a safe environment. So Rav Yosef Engel suggests that Pru Ravu is a goal-oriented, is a maisa-oriented mitzvah. So you put from Pru Ravu with Anus Rachman Apatre. Sheves, goal-oriented mitzvah. You can't say Anus Rachman Apatre because the whole point is to populate the world. And if you didn't populate the world, then you haven't... Okay, but either way, we assume that if it's an anus, then certainly they could use contraception. And certainly, as we'll soon see, the halacha recognizes the need to space children as well, that both for the mother's health and for the family's health, not to just have mamish one right after the other in many circumstances. And also, one of the attitudes that we have to go into it, thinking about, is that there's a big difference between a couple that's fulfilled Puruvu and one that hasn't. And there's a big difference between a couple that has a child and one that hasn't had any children yet. And there's a big difference between a woman who's unlikely to conceive anyway and is just using contraception for Yishuv Hadas, like a woman who's nursing or a woman who's older, versus a woman who is very likely to conceive. So those are just some of the attitudinal things. So take a couple of questions, and then we'll get into delaying and some of the practical benefits. You had a question? It's not really out of place. I mean, if you read the whole tshuva, he's just saying that you could trust the doctor, you know. And what he's really discussing is whether we should preach abstinence to a couple that can't have, you know, that's nervous about it. And he's saying, no, that's a terrible, terrible idea. That's what the tshuva is really about. That abstinence is a terrible idea for a married couple. It would ruin their whole shalom bias, and it's not going to work. And it's that's really what the tshuva is about. But I think he just thinks that you could trust doctors on that issue. Yeah.
So with respect to Moshe saying that you have to ask a real rab about shadow for birth control. So, like, more practically speaking, if we're like high school rabbim or a rabbi on campus, and we have like students that come ask us these shadows, should we ask our Rebbe, who is a Rav Muvak, about the Shaila, or should we send them on to someone else?
That's a very good question. I would say that it's unlikely that they're going to want to sit and talk to someone that they don't know about such an issue. A couple wants to talk to someone that they know, someone that knows them about the issue. So I would say more important than being a Rav Muvak is having a Masorah and how to deal with these things from a Rav Muvak. And if you don't know the answer right away, it's always okay, and this is just a general rule, it's always okay to say, I'm going to get back to you. Meaning, we live in a world with blue checks, you know, and people get very nervous that WhatsApp had blue checks and they have to get back to them right away. But it's always okay to say, you know, this is a weighty matter, this is something that requires consideration, and then to talk it over with a Rav Muvak. So, That's what. It's also a good idea to talk it over with the Rav Mufat very often, because your heart goes out to them. Meaning, it's people think that this is like something that like rabbis are exerting control over people, but no Rav likes to do this. No one likes having this conversation. You know, a couple comes and they have whatever anxieties they have, and they have an idea about how they want their life to go, and you have to say, "I'm sorry, the halacha says not that way." Yeah, it's not a pleasant conversation to have. Rav Willick says when people come, he just says, go somewhere else." You know, like sometimes they say, "No, we want to talk to you. You're Rav Willick," but like no one wants to have those conversations. So it's very easy to be, when you're a sensitive person, to sort of give in. You know, and say, okay, whatever you want, you know, I just want you to be happy. And so it's good to have like an objective person to talk things through. That's what I would say, that of course you could have the conversation with them, but that it has to, whatever you say to them has to be based on a Mesorah, and better than a Mesorah, an actual conversation with someone who's an unbiased person. Yeah.
Based on what you just said, the last part, the story about the Ish story of the Willy, you think that like he would tell people that you would be mocked, so they should go somewhere else?
I think he typically tells people to go somewhere else because he knows what the result is going to be. He'll tell people. I don't think he's secretive about that. Now, as far as delaying, so let's get into lemaisa. So, are you allowed to delay having children after you get married? So we always delay having children because one becomes chayv in mitzvahs at the age of 13. Our mitzvahs at the age of 13. We don't get married at 13. The Mishnah didn't even say we get married at 13. The Mishnah says, "Ben shmona asrei lechuppah," because we assume that a person has to be properly prepared, and a person can stay in learning, finish school, whatever it is, till he's properly prepared. But what we're discussing is not when to get married, and that's why I say when someone asks, "Am I ready to start dating?" So you say, "Well, are you ready to have children?" Once we get married, that's where the issue becomes an issue. So when it comes to most mitzvos that have a specific time, it is more obviously a bittul mitzvah if you let that time pass. Right, meaning if there's a mitzvah like lulav and sukkos is over and you didn't do it, so by delaying the mitzvah you've been mevatel the mitzvah. Puravu is not like that, right? By delaying the mitzvah, I could still have kids, so lechora could be done later. However, the Rambam in the 15th parak of Hilchos Ishus writes that you're not supposed to delay having children. The Rambam writes, if she allows her husband, she's mochel on the mitzvah ona, that's mutter. She's not saying never have bia with me. She's saying I'm mochel yona. Says the Rambam, that doesn't work if you haven't done the mitzvah puravu yet. And that's according to Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer, Simenayim Vav. Additionally, the Gemara in Moed Katan says four reasons that you can't get married in Chol HaMoed. One of the reasons you can't get married in Chol HaMoed, bittul piri v'rivya. Implying, what's going to happen if they don't get married in Chol HaMoed? They'll get married after Yontif. They'll have kids then. What do you mean bittul piri v'rivya? Apparently the Gemara calls that bittul. It calls the delaying of having children a bittul mitzvah. The question is why, meaning that it's called the bittul mitzvah. That's mefurish in the Gemara, right? That's referred to as a bittul mitzvah. The question is why is that called a bittul mitzvah? So there's certainly the component of zrizin makdim in the mitzvahs, but that's not a bittul mitzvah. I mean, zrizin makdim in the mitzvahs, you should do mitzvahs at the earliest possible time, and we do sacrifice rizos for a lot of other considerations. We routinely do a bris later in the day in order to not inconvenience a grandparent who's coming in from out of town or something like that. Or on a fast day, so a crowd doesn't have to gather twice, once at Shacharis when you're doing the bris, and then again when they're going to have the Suda. So very often you'll go to a bris on a fast day. No, anyone ever been to a bris on a fast day? So it could be done in two ways. So if everyone's local, they'll do the bris in the morning and then later they'll regather for their Suda. More often, they'll do the bris mincha time. And then they'll have the speeches, and by the time the speech is over, they'll daven Maariv, then they'll have the Suda. Right? That's typically how it's done. So we do these things. We do sacrifice reason makdim in the mitzvah. So it can't just be a dinner's reason. So Rav Shechter suggests that just like the Nadav Yudan Yardayat in Yonasim Kov Samach Vav, in that famous tshuva, discusses a mila shalob bizmana, he discusses a case where a baby was not going to have a bris bizmana anyway, right? But it was ready for a bris 2 weeks before Pesach, or a week before Pesach, or 5 days before Pesach. And they wanted to know, can they delay the bris until Erev Pesach? And that way, the Bechor, you know, all the firstborns won't have to fast. They didn't come up with the chop of having a siyum yet, so they so that way they're not going to have to fast. You know, they figured out how to solve all of the inconveniences of Judaism. So Nadav Yehuda writes that you can't do that because you have to do it at the earliest possible time. Delaying is a bittul mitzvah. So, therefore, it would stand to reason delaying having children from the first opportunity is also a bittul mitzvah. And that would mean that a person can be mevatel and mekayim the very same mitzvah, Rav Shechter points out. Right? Meaning, why? A person has a son and a daughter, so they're mekayim peruvu, but they were also mevatel peruvu because they waited 5 years till they did that. Right? So you could be mekayim and mevatel the very same mitzvah. It's an interesting chiddush. The raya to that idea is a Gemara Makas Tafid Gimel and Beis, Rav Shechter quotes, that derives from a pasuk that we don't bring a chatas for somebody who failed to do mila. So why do you need a pasuk to tell me you don't bring a chatas? You know, can't bring a chatas shemesu baleh is a chatas that can't be brought anyway if the guy's dead. So chatas assumes, bringing a chatas assumes the guy's alive. So I need a pasuk to tell me you can't bring a chatas for someone who failed to do mila. Of course you can't do a chatas for someone who failed to do mila. He didn't fail to do mila yet. He's still alive. He might still get a bris. Elamai, it's called a bittul mitzvah. Because thus far he's failed to do mila. He may only be delaying, but that's called a bittul mitzvah. So Rav Shechter rejects that argument, and he says, no, you could argue that mila is different, because there is a proper set time for the mitzvah, whereas peruvu doesn't have like an exact set time for the mitzvah. So Rav Shechter then presents a different argument. Quotes a Gemara Moed Katan, Dav Zayin and Beis, that learns from a pasuk that re'iyas negayim can be delayed sometimes. Looking at a negat sara'as can be delayed sometimes. It seems that even though there's no set time for Re'iyas Negayim, you need a pasuk that allows postponing Re'iyas Negayim. So the Chazon Ish in Negayim isn't sure whether it's just an issue of Zrizus, or that whenever there's no set time, the first opportunity becomes the set time, and failing to do things at that first opportunity is a bittul mitzvah. And the Chazon Ish, Rav Shechter quotes, prefers the second way of understanding, which would mean that a young couple can't postpone having children, that would be called a bittul mitzvah if they postpone having children. Rav Shechter has a particular expertise in Chazon Ish and Taharos. You know that Meister Rav Shechter likes to tell that when he was a little boy growing up in Philadelphia, his father was the Rav of the shul there, and they didn't have very many svarim. They had a shas, and they had a shulchan aruch, a tanach. They didn't have much else, so there wasn't much to entertain a young mind. So there was a guy in the neighborhood who was childhood friends with the Chazon Ish, and the guy's daughter was very ill, so his friends convinced him that you should send a letter to Avram Yishai, to your old childhood friend. He said, why? Whatever happened to Avram Yishai? Oh, he became a big rabbi. You should send him a letter. So he wrote a letter to the Chazon Ish. My daughter is sick. Can you daven for her? And the Chazon Ish sent back like a rebbish of my son. He sent back a copy of his Sefer and Taros and said, put this under your daughter's pillow. And bracha, shishav refuah shleima. So he put it under his daughter's pillow, the daughter died, and now the guy had a Chazon Ish and Taros, and he didn't even know which way to hold the Chazon Ish and Taros. So a regular Baal Bas in Philadelphia in 1950, right? So what's he going to do with the Chazon Ish and Taros? So he brought it to the rabbi. So he brought it to Rav Shechter's father. Rav Shechter's father had a Shas, and a Shulchan Aruch, and a Tanakh, and a Chazon Ish and Taros. So how is a young Herschel Shechter going to entertain himself if not by reading the Chazon Ish and Taros? So that's why he's always quoting Chazon Ish and Taros, because he said it was his Girsa D'Ankasa. It was his, from when he was young. He moved out of Philadelphia already when he was Bar Mitzvah. So when he was young, he was reading Chazon Ish and Taros, like most of us. Another possible source for the requirement to have children right away is Chuvas Maram Shik, Shechter quotes, and Ezra Simon Aleph, who says that Chashin on the Misal is Man Meruba. That's why, even though the Torah allows waiting until the next Yantuf to bring the previous Yantuf's Karban, we won't delay past 7 days, because that's considered a Zman Meruba. So a person doesn't know if you're going to be alive to have children by the time you're ready to have children. So you got to do mitzvos as they come. Rabbi Willard points out that the Rambam based on the Tosefta, says that a person who doesn't yet have children is not allowed to marry a katana. Right? Why not? Why can't he marry a katana? So, because she's not able to have children. Not yet! But she's a katana. That's a mum over. You know, she's gonna become a gadola one day. She'll be able to have children. Says Rabbi Willig, that's a raya. You're not supposed to delay having children. The very fact that a katana will become a gadola, meaning he says by practicing birth control, you're turning your wife. That's what someone here quoted this to me once. Rabbi Willig says that birth control makes her halachically a katana. That's not what he said. What he said is that when you're practicing birth control, you're making it like marrying a katana. That you're violating the isser of marrying a katana. The isser of marrying a katana is that you're not having children. So by using birth control, you're violating that isser of marrying a katana. And Rabbi Neuberger points out that delaying is very often a bittul because childbearing years are limited. And your time will run out at the same time, regardless of when you start, right? It's like, people who come to shul late, everyone leaves at the same time, magically, no matter what, right? So if you start having children 10 years later, so you're gonna run out of time earlier than you would have. I think he means that even though it's not a bittul per revu, because you may still leave yourself enough time to have a son and a daughter, but it will be a bittul at least of a ularev al tanach yadecha. And therefore, the default position should be that you have children right away. What about the argument that couples suffer from so much anxiety and they're nervous and they have to build the relationship before they have children? And there are rabbanim that say that that after a couple gets married for 3 months, for 6 months, they should automatically, I think Rabbi Tendler holds this way, they should automatically use birth control. At least 20 years ago, Rabbi Tendler was saying this, I assume he still does, that they should automatically use birth control because they just need to build the marriage. There are too many divorces going on. There are too many quick divorces, too many problems with shalom bayis. Couples need to really work on the marriage. So Rabbi Willig's response is, that is often true, but it is also often not true. Meaning sometimes a couple, you can tell, they're emotionally in a really good place. They're in a very emotionally healthy place. And if that's the case, it shouldn't just become the norm that everyone is mevatel a mitzvah that is the most important, that's a mitzvah rabba, that's such an important mitzvah. That's why these things need to be discussed, particularly when people have anxiety. So a lot of really wonderful people suffer from anxiety. I don't know why anxiety is so much more common in today's. I once told a couple, they came to meet with me, and I said, anyone have suffered from anxiety? Have you been treated for anxiety? And they said, no, we're good. And we just don't want to have children for a year. And I said, no, I'm sorry. And then I got a call from, it was Robinson Kamenetsky, I remember, called me up. She's like, how could you tell them they should have children right away? Do you know how much time, how many therapists she's been to try to, deal with her anxiety issues? And I asked. They didn't tell me. But people with anxiety can live very happy lives and very productive lives and do great things and all those things. The only thing is that you have to be smart about it. That very often going through major life changes can rattle them. So you have to, this is what psychologists tell me, at least, they go through a major life change. Don't immediately put another major life change, right? So getting married is a major life change, right? So make sure that gets settled and that they're okay. And then move on to the next major life change. That makes a lot of sense to me, right? If you can have someone that's going to, it's going to suffer, because that could obviously hurt the marriage. These are the kinds of things. Most often when you ask a couple why they want to delay having children right after getting married, it will be one of the following. It will be anxiety, which I think is a good reason, to say, okay, you know what, let's talk again in 3 months or 6 months. I like to say 3 months, because usually if the couple is good and healthy and whatever, very often after 3 months they're like, yeah, it was fine. I was nervous about marriage, but it really, very often after 3 months they're like totally okay with it. So at least have another conversation three months later. And sometimes it's always good to have another conversation 3 months later, especially if there are problems. Because sometimes I once had that conversation 3 months later and they hadn't yet been gomer bia. So that's a real problem, right? So it's always good to have another conversation sooner rather than later. So I'll often say, let's talk again in 3 months. Not a psak, but let's talk again in 3 months, right? A lot of times a couple will come and they'll say, we just can't afford it. that's much harder to be makel based on we can't afford it because we're still in school and this. No one's going to starve in all likelihood. We don't have time because I'm being busy in school. Also difficult. Rav Shachter likes to say that's what grandparents are for. They should come and they should help out. Rabbi Neuberger points out, though, that sometimes a couple is, the woman is in a program, and if she has a kid, she's going to have to drop out of the program and lose whatever she's accomplished so far. He said, that's a hefset already. That's different. It's one thing to say I'm going to have to delay when I go to graduate school. That's one thing. But it's a hefset. To be mafset, he doesn't think you have to go. A lot of times, and this actually happens, couples will say, we'd love to have kids, but my parents are going to kill me. They already think it's so crazy that I'm getting married after just 6 months, or knowing the person, or that I'm so young. They're going to kill me. So that, you say, as much as people like say the rabbi doesn't belong in these decisions, your parents really don't belong in those decisions. Now, obviously, if they have legitimate concerns about your own emotional health, so they should talk that out with somebody, they should express that to the rabbi. I've gotten those calls also from parents saying, look, I'm not just being crazy and controlling over here. My kid has a real issue over here. And sometimes they do. And the kid's not forthcoming about that. But if it's just like my parents are going to kill me, that's not a great reason. Bez Hashem, tomorrow? Tomorrow's Tuesday. Yeah. Should we have Shia? So tomorrow we'll
like regular time then.
You want to do it earlier?
Could you do regular time?
I'll do regular time. Alright, well, stay tuned to the WhatsApp, we'll figure it out. Jed will let us all know. Tomorrow, I just want to finish up this issue of, so I want to discuss spacing children and some rules for passing. We're really almost at the end. The truth is, maybe just 15 minutes to finish this topic, and then on Wednesday and Thursday we can get into contraception. So maybe we don't even need much time tomorrow. Just like probably in 15 minutes we can finish up. Okay? All right.